Good morning, great men and women of God. I'm glad you guys are here with us today. And we're going to be in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 10. We've been in there all year, and we're getting towards the end of it, so we're in chapter 10 today. But I want to get you thinking about something. This is something that a friend of mine often says, and I've been really chewing on this statement for a few months now. And the statement is this: the decisions we make today determine the stories we tell tomorrow. This has been in my brain because I've been thinking that one day all of us are going to tell a story about our lives. We're going to look back, we're going to recount our journey, and really the chapters of the story of our lives boil down to the decisions that we've made. Now, we all have stories that we're going to love to tell. We're going to love to tell funny stories or times that we overcame a challenge or the story of how we met the love of our life. But I bet at the same time, all of us are going to have stories we would rather leave untold. Chapters we wish we could skip over, parts we could edit, stuff we regret or we feel shame about or we wish had never happened. All these are decisions that we've made become these stories that we're going to tell. And so if this is true, that the decisions we make today determine the stories we tell tomorrow, this is what it's got me asking. Am I living the story I want to tell? Am I making the kinds of decisions today that I will be proud of, that I will want to tell the stories of later in my life? And this is what has got me thinking, is because we're in the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes is Solomon's story at the end of his life. And as we've read through this book, we've seen there are chapters that I bet he was excited to share. Times that he told stories about how he figured out what life was about or how he understood his relationship to God. But I bet if Solomon was honest with us, he would also say, there were parts in my book that I really wanted to leave out. The times that I thought that money would make me happy, or I thought that having all kinds of sex would make me happy, or this would bring joy to me, and I wish I could kind of edit those out. And to his credit, he didn't. It's all part of the story. But what you realize when you read through a memoir like Ecclesiastes is that the decisions that Solomon made in his life determine the stories he's telling us now. So how does that help us? Well, I think that Solomon is telling us his story so that we still have time to change our story. There are decisions yet to be made in our lives that we can learn from his mistakes and we can learn from his learnings and we can say, I will choose differently. And that's what we're going to see in the 10th chapter of Ecclesiastes today. What is going to happen is this. Solomon is going to focus on the decisions that we make in life. And what he's going to do is he's going to give us kind of a general principle about decisions. And then he's going to go into four different areas of decisions. And as I've read through this and read through this, I've realized this. Some of these are decisions that are unintentional on our part. You see, there are some decisions out there that are clear. We can point and go, I remember making that decision to buy that house or buy that car or to take that job. Those are decisions that are clear. But there are a lot of decisions that you and I might be making every day. And it's not till later in life that we realize, you know, I didn't realize it, but when I was doing this, I was actually making a decision. And so we're going to walk through chapter 10 today. We're going to get a general principle about decisions, and then we're going to look at four different decisions we may be making and not even knowing it. And here's what I want to ask of you. I'd like for your engagement today on this. I would love it if you would open up your heart to God and say, God, are any of these areas decisions I'm making and I'm not even aware of? And maybe as we go through these four, you might go through all four and God might say, nope, none of these. You're totally swinging a miss by Thomas for you today. But there might be one of these that God says, hey, I want you to pay attention to this one. So I'll share those four, but you be thinking about it with me, about the ones that might be, I know what mine are. Spoiler alert, they're all four. So I was like, oh, okay. Ecclesiastes chapter 10. We're going to start in verse 1. You ready? All of you ready? Who's ready? Okay, good. Most of you ready. Great way to start the chapter. Dead flies. I love Solomon. Dead flies. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. What is he saying here? Well, imagine for a moment, you have this expensive bottle of perfume, and what you're paying for is the craft that's gone onto this. There have been hours and maybe days and weeks of effort going in to produce this bottle. There have been ingredients that had to be brought from far away, and they traveled, and they were put into this. And then somebody with expertise and training who's devoted their life to making perfume that built this beautiful perfume, and you want to buy it, and you want to use it, and you want to smell great. But somebody throws a few dead flies in this bottle of perfume, and all of a sudden, it's not a great Mother's Day gift, right? What happened? Here's what I think he's saying. In the same way, a life that's built on good decisions, a life that's full of wisdom and honor, can be outweighed by one bad decision. A few dead flies of choices that we make. And I wonder if Solomon is thinking about this principle from his own father, David. If you remember, his father, David, was also a king. In fact, he's probably one of the most well-known kings in the entire Bible, in the history of God's people. David. David had all these stories he could tell at the end of his life. Hey, did I tell you about the time that I took down a giant in front of an army? Hey, did I tell you about the time I wrote all these songs that people still read today? Hey, did I tell you the times, all the different times on the battlefield when we shouldn't have won, but we did? Story after story after story. Yet when I say King David, what story immediately leaps to your mind? Bathsheba. A story that actually has its own name. A time when David, who had built a life of wisdom and honor, made a decision, I'm going to sleep with this woman, I'm going to have her husband killed to cover it up. And that one moment of folly, of foolish decision making, was a turning point in his life. His life was never the same. Now you and I might go, that doesn't seem fair. You mean I could make good decision after good decision after good decision, and yet one bad decision could outweigh them all? Solomon is just saying, yeah. It's not fair, but it's life. And so it becomes important for us to really consider the decisions we make. Here's how I would kind of characterize this principle. Life is built on hundreds of wise decisions and undone by a few foolish ones. Again, that's not fair, but I think if you think about people's lives, that's kind of how it works. If this is true, it elevates the need for us to really be wise about the decisions we make. You could live a life worth telling. You could make hundreds of wise decisions, but that story of your life could have some chapters that go pretty dark when you make foolish decisions. Well, what are some examples of foolish decisions? I mean, we could go in a lot of different directions, but where Solomon's going to go today, I think, are some foolish decisions we might be making and not even be aware of it. He's going to give us four, and remember, as we walk through these, I hope that you're kind of open-hearted and saying, God, could this be something that I'm dealing with or thinking about? Here's the first one. It's going to be in verse 2. It's a decision to not be self-aware in our leadership, in the people that we lead. He describes it this way. A wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart goes to the left. Even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense. And he says to everyone with his life, what? He is a fool. Solomon's describing a bad leader. This is a person who makes bad decisions. They ought to go right, but they go left. And what's worse, everyone that sees this guy on the road knows one thing. What do they all know? He's a fool. I think Solomon would be talking about this man right here, Michael Scott. Have you noticed that Michael Scott is the world's what? Best boss. Have you ever seen the show The Office? We love the show The Office. The whole joke, the whole humor of the show The Office is Michael Scott is the boss, but he's the world's what? Worst boss. He is foolish. And what's so funny about the show is he doesn't seem to be in on the joke. He actually thinks he's a great leader and that his decisions are good, and everyone is pulling their hair out going, oh, Michael Scott, you're the worst joke of a boss ever. Now, Michael Scott is funny to watch as long as he's on TV, but what happens when you're the Michael Scott of your home, of your office, of your ministry, and you're walking around with a mug and you say, I'm the world's best parent, I'm the world's best leader, I'm the world's best officer, but yet everyone around you is going, oh, no, you're not. Being self-aware. What drives leaders to ignore being self-aware? What drives them to make bad decisions? He says in verse 4, If the anger of the ruler rises against you, don't leave your place, for calmness will lay great offenses to rest. He's doing two things here. One, he's saying, hey, if you're calm around an angry leader, that can go well for you. But you notice what's driving this ruler is anger, pride. See, this kind of leader decides, I have to be right, and so if you oppose me, my anger will rise against you and all who disagree with me. And what's an example of a bad decision that foolish leaders make? Verse 5, there's an evil I've seen under the sun, as it were, it's an error that proceeds from this kind of leader. And here it is, folly, foolishness is set in high places, and the rich are set in low places. I've seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. His language here is kind of hard to grasp, but you get kind of the image that leaders who are not self-aware are putting fools in high places, while the true princes who ought to be there are walking around. Foolish leaders make bad hires. They too quickly put people in charge of ministries. They don't think about the people or the images or the things that they're bringing into their home and putting in front of their family. They're just not aware of that. They're not taking the time to pray or think. So let me ask you a question. If you may have a world's best something mug, and I'm not telling you you shouldn't carry that around in pride. That's great. Someone gave it to you. But here's a question. How aware are you of how the people you lead are perceiving you? How aware are you? We don't want to be the kind of fool like a Michael Scott or like this leader who's just unaware. It seems like all these leaders in these first six verses have one thing in common. They lack self-awareness. They don't know that everyone on the road thinks they're a fool. They don't see how their anger is affecting the people they lead. They don't see how their foolish decisions and the people they put in positions is having a dramatic effect on people around them. And their decision to not be self-aware is costing them with the people they lead. There's one area. Think about it in the areas that you lead. Now, here's a second area where Solomon's going to go from the throne to the workplace. And it's a decision we make when we decide not to be teachable in our work. Solomon's going to go on to describe a bunch of different people he's seen working. Let's list these people out. He goes, there was a guy who digs a pit, and then he fell into it. And a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them. Solomon says, let me describe these kinds of people to you. It's the guy who starts digging a pit, but then he doesn't pay attention, and what happens? He falls in. Another guy's remodeling his home, and he breaks through the wall, but he doesn't realize that in these dark crevices there might be a snake. He doesn't look. He just sticks his hand in there, and what happens? He gets bit. Another couple guys are carrying stones around, or they're chopping wood, but they're not really paying attention to what they're doing, and they drop a stone on their foot, or they have a log split and fire back and hit them in the eye. He goes on to verse 10. Another example, if the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength. But wisdom helps one to succeed. He says there's a guy out there chopping wood again, and yet he never takes time to sharpen his axe, and so his job is getting harder and harder every day, and he doesn't know why. Or this one, if the serpent bites before it is charmed, there is no advantage to the charmer. There's a lot of snake biting that Solomon is really worried about in his day. So there's kind of a lot of advice about snakes. But you get this image here of maybe some guy that's like got this job where he sits on a mat and he's playing the flute and he's got a snake behind him in a basket and he's always doing this kind of thing and he's earning money. But one day he doesn't wait to make sure that the snake is fully charmed. And so what happens? He gets bit. Now, all these workers have one thing in common. They presume. They know how to do it. Don't give me any advice. Listen, I know how to dig a pit. I know how to break a wall. I know how to carry a stone. I know how to chop some wood. I know how to charm a snake. I don't need to learn anything. But what's the problem? They don't know what they don't know. They're choosing to be unteachable. I've reached a point now in my life, in my hiring of people. I get to hire people from time to time. And the number one thing I'm convinced that I look for when I hire someone is teachability. I will hire teachability over talent 100% of the time. And I've learned that lesson painfully because there have been so many times in my life where I've been dazzled by some talent and I thought, well, you know, this person, they really can do it. But their lack of teachability has bitten them and bitten me, and I feel snake bit. And I've regretted it. Where are you learning to the next level in your work? What are you reading and who are you listening to? Who are you seeking out and saying, would you help me get better? Where are you praying and saying, God, I want to learn this. I want to get better at doing this. I want to grow. When you presume you don't have more to learn, that's a foolish decision. Now, Solomon then is going to turn his attention towards a third thing. This is actually one of his favorite topics. He writes about this all the time. And it's deciding to be careless with what? Our words. The words of a wise man earn him favor, win him favor. But the lips of a fool do what? They consume him. The beginning of his words of his mouth is foolishness. The end of his talk is evil madness. This is a man who speaks without thinking. His words come back to bite him. They consume him. He opens his mouth. Boom, foolishness falls out. When he's done talking, what's happened? People are hurt. People have experienced pain. There's evil madness. He talks a lot. Look at verse 14. A fool multiplies words. He has a lot to say, even though no man knows what is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? The toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. Now, this is kind of funny to me because here's a guy who doesn't know what's going to happen. He doesn't know what is to be. No one can even tell him what will be after him, and yet he's talking like he does. He's telling everyone, oh, you ought to go this way, but he himself doesn't even know the way to the city. Have you ever known someone like that? Don't nudge them. I'm just asking, have you known someone like that? Have you ever seen the guy at the gym who's always telling you how to lift when it's clear he's not in shape? What about the person who doesn't have kids, yet they have so much advice on how you ought to raise yours? You know when I was an expert in parenting? Before I had kids. I'd be at a restaurant, I'd see a family over there, it's like a war zone, it's just carnage and gross and food flying and crying and parents that just are, and I was looking over there, such judgment, why don't you wait till your kids, teach them some manners. I mean, I know they're 6 months old, but figure this stuff out. Now that I had kids, my attitude is much different. I look over there and I just go, I am just glad you're alive. Good for you. But you know, the person that doesn't, they're not doing it themselves. They don't know the way to go, but they're telling you. Or the friend of yours maybe who is broke. They've made bad deal after bad deal, and they're trying to give you financial advice. And you're like, I'm not listening to you. You don't know the way to the city, but you keep talking. These foolish talkers all have one thing in common. They're careless. They don't think about the impact of their words. They don't think about what they're saying. What do your words reveal about you? Do the words you speak win you favor with people? Are you careful with what you say, or are you careless? Being careless with our words is a foolish decision. And then there's one more area of kind of decisions that we might be making and not know it, and it's this. It's deciding to disrespect authority. Now, Solomon shared his opinion on authority a few weeks ago, but let's just acknowledge something. He's gonna be up front that sometimes we have good leaders and sometimes we have bad leaders. Look at this. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. What should be happening in the morning? People should be working in the morning, but this feast is happening. Happy are you, O land, when your king's the son of the nobility and your princes feast at the right time. And they feast for strength, not just to get drunk. So Solomon's already talked a little bit a few verses ago about what it's like when we're the leaders, but now he's shifting gears and saying, but listen, you're not always the leader, sometimes you're the follower. You may follow a parent, you may follow a boss, you may follow an officer, you may follow a leader on your team. You're in a position of following their leadership. And when you have a good leader, then happy are you, O land. When you have a leader who's noble, who knows when to feast, who works for strength and not drunkenness, whenever that happens, just celebrate and be happy. It's great to work for a great boss. But sometimes, Solomon says, we have bad authorities. We have kings who act like kids. We have princes who feast when they should be working. They're partying while people are serving. And if that's the situation you're in, Solomon says, well, woe to your land. What's it like to work for a bad boss? He gives us a description. Through sloth, the roof sinks in. Through indolence, the house leaks. This leader is lazy. They're not taking care of their job. And who's suffering for it? everybody that lives in the house. Hey, the roof is falling in, but you're not doing anything about it, and we're all getting wet. Meanwhile, this seems to be your attitude of life. Hey, bread's made for laughter. Wine makes life happy. Money answers everything. In other words, while the roof is leaking, you're partying, and you're making it all about your needs. So what's the decision that we're being faced with here? Well, a decision is, what are we going to do when we serve a bad leader? Solomon says, here's what you can decide. Verse 20. Even in your thoughts, don't do this. What? Don't do what? Do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature will tell the matter. In other words, it's a bad decision to badmouth bad leaders. Question, what? But they're a bad leader. I know. We've established that. Don't badmouth them. But what if they're really bad? I want to complain about them to somebody. I want to go tell everyone and get them riled up. I want to tear them down. Solomon says, look, I'm just warning you. Be careful. It's going to come back to get you. Have you ever heard that phrase, a little birdie told me? Have you heard that? Where'd you hear that? A little birdie told me, which means somebody is a little birdie that told you. I think it came from this verse right here. Solomon's saying, look, I can't explain it, but stuff you say gets back to the leader. I wonder if Solomon's understanding about authority was passed down a little bit from his father David. Remember David, a king? You remember that David was not always the king. There was a time when David, the king, was actually serving under a really bad leader named Saul, the king. Saul was a leader who made bad decisions. He acted like a child. He feasted whenever he wanted to. He was lazy when it came to the things of the kingdom he should have been doing. He seemed to be in leadership for bread, wine, and money. He was such a bad leader that he actually saw David as a threat to his throne and kept trying to kill him. That's a bad leader. I don't know how many of you say, I have the worst boss in the world. Really? How many times has your boss actually tried to kill you? If it's less than two, then you don't have that bad of a boss. And so one time, David and his lieutenant were out, and they saw Saul's camp, and they said, let's go scout it out. Let's go see what he's coming at us with. Let's go make sure we can find out what's coming. And they got into the camp, and they turned the corner, and lo and behold, completely unexpected, there's Saul. He's asleep. He's unarmed. And David's lieutenant says, this is the moment, David. Just say the word. I got my sword here. I'll thrust it through him. He'll be dead. He'll not even wake up. And all our problems will be over. We can get rid of the bad leader and you'll be good. What a moment. No one would have blamed David. What did he say? No. Don't kill him. Who can remain innocent after attacking the Lord's anointed one? Now, David did not respect Saul, the official, but David had respect for the office Saul held. David knew cursing the king is going to cost him in the long run. David knew that this conversation, a little birdie would go and tell everybody, and everyone that follows David would remember this moment. And if there was ever a time that David was in charge and people didn't like how he led, they would be able to look to this and say, but you remember what David did. We have to respect authority. David knew, if I go against God-given authority, I'm going against God. And so he didn't curse the king. Who do you report to? It's a parent, it's a boss, maybe it's a coworker in a setting, maybe it's a leader in a ministry. You report to somebody, probably. Are they a good leader? Be happy. Are they a bad leader? How are you respecting them? Have you ever thought, I'm off the hook because they're not worth respecting? This might be a foolish decision that comes back and bites you. Well, I want to pause here for a moment of reflection. Solomon has offered us kind of these four decisions that could potentially be ones we're making and not even be aware of it. I want to give you a moment to kind of reflect on these with God. Here they are again, kind of summarize them. As you think about the people that you lead, do you feel you're pretty self-aware? Do you know how they perceive you? As you think about the work that God's given you to do, do you feel like you are growing and learning? Are you teachable? As you think about the words that you speak, do you feel like you are inviting care or are you being careless? And in a situation where you might be under someone's authority, how are you demonstrating respect to them, or is that a challenge for you? I want to give you a moment with God, and as you do, just take some time to pray and say, God, as I go through this list, are there any that you want to talk to me about? Let's give him some space to speak. Solomon says, a little bit of folly can outweigh a lifetime of wisdom and honor. Life is built on hundreds of wise decisions, yet it can be undone by a few foolish ones. Now here's what's interesting about these kinds of, I called these decisions, and yet I don't know that some of these are actually decisions we make. I've never met someone who said, I have decided to be unaware in my leadership. I've never met anyone who said, I've decided I'm unteachable. Actually, I had a conversation with somebody once who said, oh, I'm very teachable, just not by you. And I was like, what? I don't think you understand what the word means. You can't say that. Like, no one ever says, I've decided I'm going to be careless in my words. No one says, I've decided to be disrespectful. No one makes these decisions overtly. These are some of the subtle decisions we make by default. We may not even be aware of it. When you're not self-aware in your leadership, when you're not teachable in your work, when you are careless with your words, when you don't respect authority, these are all foolish decisions that we make today that are going to be a part of the story we tell tomorrow. So how do we avoid these? How do we have a better story to tell down the road? Well, Solomon gave us the answer in the middle of the chapter, smack dab in the middle, verse 10. Wisdom. Wisdom helps one to succeed. When it comes to the decisions that will define us, it's wisdom that's the difference. He said a fool's heart is going to make the wrong decision, but a wise man's heart will incline to the right one. Maybe this is why Solomon spent so much time on wisdom. When he was younger and God came to him and said, Solomon, I'm going to give you anything you want. What do you want? Solomon said, I want wisdom. When you look at the output of his life, Solomon wrote books on wisdom. And when you saw the things that Solomon pursued in his life, he got to the peak of many mountains, wealth, achievement, success. But one mountain he never stopped climbing till the day he died was Mount Wisdom. Now, last week, Solomon showed us that wisdom can't protect us from everything, right? Wisdom is not a force field. It's not a guarantee because there are things called time and there are all things called chance. And wisdom is not a shield that protects you from those. It can't always protect you. However, it can help you avoid some foolish decisions. So how do we get wisdom? Well, let me share with you two brief ways that I know you already know. I just want to remind us of them. And then I want to dive into just how do we get wisdom in these four areas of leadership and work and words and following. How do you get wisdom? First of all, ask God for wisdom. Read this verse with me. It's so simple, but it's so easy to overlook. Read this with me. If you need, I'm sorry, out loud. I meant not. Okay. Read this out loud. Ready? If you need wisdom, ask our generous God, and he will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking. This is so simple, yet it's so simple that we actually overlook it. Ask God for wisdom. He won't get mad. He's generous. He has more wisdom than we could ever imagine. And he's like, hey, take this. I'm happy to. Oh, you want some? Here's some more for you. Everybody gets some. He's the Oprah of wisdom. I don't even know what that means, but that's the image that came to my mind. He's giving out wisdom left and right. He says, I'm not going to get mad at you. And think about this. How many times have we faced a decision? We've prayed, we have drawn up pros and cons, we've weighed options, we have talked about it with others till we're blue in the face, but we haven't taken 5 minutes to stop and pray. Simply to ask God, show me what to do. This past week, we bought my daughter a car. On Friday night, we bought a car. And I can't tell you how many hours we spent online researching Kelley Blue Book values and all these kinds of things and driving around from town to town. And it was Friday afternoon that we finally, in the car with Clara, I said, hey, let's stop. Will you pray right now? And she said, God, give us wisdom to help us find the right car. And we, like an hour later, found the right car. Now, I'm not telling you that's this magical story that works. I'm just saying it was a realization moment for me. Wow, all this work, and yet the simple task of just saying, God, what do you want us to do? We get wisdom when we ask. The second way we get wisdom that I'm sure you know is that we read the wisdom God already gave us. God knows we have short memories, so he wrote stuff down for us. We have this Bible that is a collection of wisdom and principles that have endured for millennia. Solomon didn't just ask God for wisdom. He wrote down what God said. And when we read these things, it's like getting insight into life above the sun, outside the fishbowl, right? Now, Solomon wrote a book called Proverbs. I don't personally think that there are 31 chapters in Proverbs. I don't think that's a coincidence that there are roughly 31 days in our month. What if you decided, I'm going to decide that for the next 31 days, I'm going to read a chapter of Proverbs a day. Maybe you start tomorrow with Proverbs chapter 1, or maybe you don't like to mess with the math, and so you're going to start with tomorrow. What's tomorrow? Yeah, someone said Monday. That is not helpful. The 7th is what the action we were looking for there. So I'm going to start in chapter 7, and I'm going to read through. What if you just did that? Now, what's going to happen is you'll read through Proverbs, and you'll be like, dead flies out. What is this about again? But there are going to be confusing moments. But the beauty of a proverb is you write it down, and you think about it, and you think about it. And the more that you let God kind of chew on that with you, it begins to open up. So I would encourage you, if you're reading a chapter of Proverbs, to say, God, what's the one proverb here that you think I need to hear today? Maybe you write it down on a card and you begin to pray and think about it. What would happen over 31 days if you took a proverb a day and began to just let God teach you wisdom? Reading the wisdom God already gave us is a great way to get wisdom. So we ask God for wisdom. We can read the wisdom he's already given. But let's go back to Solomon's chapter for a minute. Solomon gave us four areas that we sometimes overlook: leadership, work, words, following authority. How can we get wisdom in those areas? Let me give you a principle, and then we'll look at how it applies to each of these. Here's the principle. It's a simple word. Listen. Listen. Solomon wrote in another place, the ear that listens to life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. The person who says, I'm going to truly listen to the people around me, and when they say things, I'm going to take it in. This is a person whose life is characterized by wisdom. And I think listening often is connected with good questions. So let me do this. Let me give you four questions to ask, one in each one of these areas of leadership, of work, of words, and responding to authority. You might want to write them down if you think they're helpful. You might want to just write down the one that pertains to the question that you're thinking about. Maybe you're sitting next to somebody, you don't want them to know you're struggling with that, so you write down three of them and they have to guess which one it was. Whatever you want to do. Here's some ideas. How do you listen to those that you lead? Here's a question. What's it like to be on the other side of me? This is not an original question to me, but I have found it to be one of the most powerful, humbling questions to ask someone you lead. Solomon talked about people who lacked self-awareness. They didn't know what it was like to be on the other side of them. This is a great question to ask. What's it like to be on the other side of me? Caution, if you ask this question, don't defend a single thing. If you have to bite your tongue in half, if you have to sit on your hands, just listen. Because the moment you stop listening and start defending, they stop, and you will not get life-giving reproof. Ask the question, what's it like to be on the other side of me? So I asked this question to my family back in the spring. Now, I'm not always the great at listening, so I have to come up sometimes with, like, this is what the pain of living in the Thompson house. My leadership coach gave me an online survey for my family to each take. So all four of my kids and my wife went online and took an online survey about me. Doesn't that sound exciting to have to do? And it was different questions. What's it like, you know, how is dad good at this, and what do you wish you had more of from dad and everything? But it's basically this question, what's it like to be on the other side of me? So I get these surveys back, and I'm sitting here reading them, and there's some good things in there, but one thing that was across the board is this. Being on the other side of dad means I don't get enough one-on-one time. Floored me, because I thought, well, I'm trying to be fair dad. You know, every time, every kid has to have equal. And this is in the spring. So I said, hey, I got a summer coming up. I'm gonna craft something. So the goal for the summer for me was to spend 24 hours with each kid. And we tried to do that. And so for Bo and I, we went to the Broncos training camp. And for Claire and I, we went out to eat. And we went on a night on the town and heard a comedian. And for, not all these are 24 hours, but they were events. For Henry, I took him on a trip to Nebraska, because what 13-year-old boy doesn't want to go to Nebraska? I mean, it was the peak. For my other son, Gus, we went camping. But the thought was, here's this statement. We don't get enough one-on-one time with you, Dad. That's what it's like to be on the other side of you. Okay, how can I begin to change that and make better decisions? What's it like to be on the other side of you? You want to increase your self-awareness. Decide you will ask that question of the people you lead. Here's the second question. This one you can ask of yourself. You can listen to yourself. How am I learning to the next level? One thing I love about my wife, Jessica, is she's always reading. She always says, leaders are learners. And she kind of has this image that just like a shark that stops swimming dies, that's what I've heard, I don't know if that's true, but just like a shark that stops swimming can die, a leader who stops learning can stagnate. So she's always reading these books. She's reading books about mindsets and vision and leading yourself. And she's always telling me about all these books every night. And she's telling me I need to read these books. And I'm like, why do I need to read these books when you're just going to tell me the Cliff Note version? And that doesn't go over as well as you think that it would, but she's given these books to leaders on her team. She finds a good book and she says, let's read this together, her team. And she's inspiring me because she realizes I can't lead people where I'm not going. And so not unlike these guys in Solomon's chapter, she's always learning and being open to it. So I started watching, and I thought, you know, let me see something in my life. And I was inspired to realize I was being presumptive about my kids' understanding of money. I assumed that just being in the house with my wife and I and hearing us discuss financial issues would be all the education they needed. And I'm realizing, I got kids walking out of the house. They don't know how to spend a dollar. They don't know how to budget. And I realized this. I don't know how to tell them. I don't know how to tell my kids how to do a budget. I don't know how to tell my kids how to think long term. And so I had to go out and buy Dave Ramsey books and Dave Ramsey videos. And we're now in this process with our family where we are learning together how to budget. And it's just getting them all sitting down is a challenge. But we're working on that. How are you learning to the next level? You can make the decision that you will be a teachable person when you ask yourself this question. A third one. This is the question where you listen to those around you that you love. This is an intimate question. What do my words reveal about me? The brother of Jesus Christ once reminded us that the words we speak really reveal what's inside of us. He said, you know, a fig tree can't produce olives. A salty water spring can't produce fresh water. And the words that you speak are going to be produced out of what's inside of you already. So you sit down with people that you love and you say, hey, what do my words reveal? Like when I speak, what does that reveal about me? What do you think's inside of me? Do you think I'm angry? Do you think I'm interested in you? Do you think I just want you to do things for me? Do you think I'm confident? Do you think I'm trying to make up for insecurity? When I speak, what do you think's inside? One of the things that we're realizing in our home about me is that often the issue with my words are my tone. I am convinced, and I wish this would happen, if someone just took a transcript of what I said, I would win all the debates because my points are solid and valid and have logic and reason to them. But apparently, the way that they're delivered cause problems in tone, and they reveal sometimes, my family says, you kind of have to be right. You're kind of being prideful with the way you're talking. What do my words reveal about me? You can decide not to be careless with your words if you will take the time to ask the people you love this question. It's painful. Last one. You can listen to those that you follow when you ask the question, how can I demonstrate respect to you? This is such an antiquated term. It's unbelievable. If you go to your parent, you go to a boss, and you say, listen, I really want to be a respectful person. How can I demonstrate respect to you? They may literally fall out of their chair. You may have thought that's a cliche, but if you want to actually see that, they will fall down because it's just an unexpected question. We may not respect the official, but we can respect the office. You might say, I don't have respect for that person. Okay, but do you respect that ultimately, as we were told by Paul, it's the Lord Jesus you're serving? Yes? Okay. Ask this question. If one of my staff has asked this question to me, I know one of my first answers would be, I feel respected when you, Jonathan, what would I say? I'll put you on the spot. What makes me feel respected about meetings when people ask about that? They show up on time. Thank you. I feel so respected that you asked that. That's what I would say. That is what I would say. I feel respected when you show up time for a meeting. You can ask this question of somebody that you follow, and I'm just telling you, it could go wavelengths for you. How do I demonstrate respect to the person over me? You can make a decision to do this when you ask this kind of question. Let me close with this. The decisions we make become the stories we tell tomorrow. How are you living out the story you want to tell? In the way that you lead people? In the way that you do your work that God's given you? In the way that you speak with your words? And in the way that you even follow and demonstrate respect when they haven't earned it? And all of these decisions, we need wisdom. And we get that when we ask God what to do, when we read what God has said, and when we decide that we're going to listen. So let's stop here and let's ask God for some wisdom. Will you pray with me? I want you to think about one of these four areas that might be something God is speaking to you. I know what mine is. God, in this area, will you give me wisdom? Are there words in your Bible I need to read that would give me some guidance? Is there someone I need to ask a question of to help me get some life-giving reproof? I want you to know that this is my heart. I'm giving it to you. I want to make better decisions in this area. Will you help me? This is what I'm going to do this week, Lord. Thank you for being a generous God who loves to give wisdom and does not rebuke. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.